Obituary. Frank Auerbach. Britain's most obsessive figurative painter died on November 11th, aged 93.
Almost every day of the week for more than six decades, Frank Auerbach would stride along Mornington Crescent. It was, and is, a typical North London street, tall terraced houses of soot-red brick and stucco with a railed garden on one side. Often he carried a plain pad and a stick of graphite to make sketches at sunrise before his neighbours stirred. He enjoyed the early, oily yellow light on the buildings and the sleeping cars. This, with gritty Camden Town and the green slopes of Primrose Hill, was his complete world. He needed no other. Its radius was perhaps a mile and a half, but it contained all the things he most liked painting over and over again. His chimney stack at the back of the Black Cat cigarette factory, his tube station in original crimson tiles, Camden High Street, a chaos of awnings, signage, buses and vivid buildings, Primrose Hill in slabs of viridian, red and blue, and the little wicket gate along the crescent that led down to his studio. By 2023, a painting of the crescent, done in 1969, fetched more than $7 million, but fame had not displaced him. His studio was a paint explosion, on canvases, of course, but also on the walls and, inches deep, on the floor. Once a brush was in his hand, he was instantly happy. He worked in a sort of storm, often squeezing the paint tubes directly on the canvas and leaving the squidges as they were. The paintings he became most famous for, from the late 1940s, were so thickly built up that they were as heavy as bas-reliefs. His first portrait of his long-time lover, Estella Olive West, seemed to have been cast from wet cement. His paintings of London bomb sites, which he found intensely dramatic, even sexy, were nightmares of muddy disruption. Yet it was one of those, summer building site from 1952, with black and orange forms embracing two delicate yellow ladders, that seemed to declare he had broken a barrier and made art that was new. Steadily, though slowly, galleries and collectors caught on. His task for the rest of his life was to make his art memorable. Just one image lodged in the public mind was all he wanted, one image that would also satisfy him and stand up by itself. But he was not a man to be satisfied. His muttered mantra as he painted was rubbish, complete rubbish. To prove the point, at the end of almost all his sessions, he would scrape the canvas clean again. To produce one good picture, anything that was merely adequate had to be obliterated with more paint, or destroyed. One portrait took 300 sittings. His bills for paint, blacks, browns and dull greens, Rembrandt and Howells colours in the early years, bright chromium and cadmium colours once he had the money, were extraordinary because he reckoned that 95% of it went into the bin. Charcoal and graphite were expunged with an eraser, leaving faces behind that were poignant in their ghostliness. Enclosed in his studio, with his ceaseless pursuit, often sleeping there, he might have been a gloomy recluse. Not so. He painted because it was fun, and much the most interesting thing he could think of doing. He resisted interviews and shows because they deflected him. His only memory of his early childhood, a Berlin childhood sharply interrupted by a Kinder transport journey to England and the murder of his parents in Auschwitz, was the good feel of a wet brush being plunged into a paint box and the colour soaking through the paper. By the age of 16, he wanted to be an artist. When he left art college, he started to sell his paintings from the pavement. For years, he was extremely poor and would take any job, acting, frame-making, or working in his friend Leon Kossoff's family bakery in Brick Lane. Leon took the cake side and he the bread side, two young artists hungering to excel. He was saved from penury when the Beaux-Arts in the early 1960s gave him an annuity and he could devote himself to art. He was not a hermit, therefore, but he still demanded a tightly focused life. Just as he had his own corner of London, he had his own small circle of friends and sitters, half a dozen or so, including Estella and Julia Wolstenholme, his wife. For years they would come to the studio at the same time every week, he fretted if they were late, and sit for two sessions of an hour. Gradually they would emerge as impasto in a broken black outline, with slashes of colour contrast here and there. It was vital to keep to the faces he knew well, as to the places, so that he could seize more life and see more truth in them. He kept using himself as a subject for the same reason, and he was infinite. He thought how well Monet had known water lilies in order to paint them as he did. Though his work did not often shout it out, his artistic influences were many. Titian, Rembrandt, Matisse, Monet, Ingres, Cézanne. It was impossible to match their standard and scope, as it also was to do anything that had never been done before. His most influential teacher was David Bomberg at the Borough Polytechnic. His circle included Francis Bacon and Lucian Freud, who collected his pictures from early on. Although he seemed in many respects a loner, his mind was crowded with painters he admired. Their presence made it all the harder to produce that one indelible image he was striving for. Nonetheless, he kept grappling. He had analysed his task as a painter not to reproduce the material object on the canvas, but to try to depict the way his mind had grasped it. Portraits demanded the same approach. He painted his friends as they felt to him to be. Depending on his mood, the context, the time of day, his subjects were continually changing, as were the colours they called for. As the years passed, his paint got brighter and lighter, and his studio almost clean. He did not think he had ever been an expressionist painter. But if his frantic, thick layering had expressed impatience with the challenge he had set himself, his later work seemed more relaxed. He would never quite pin down his friends, his lovers, himself, or Mornington Crescent. The dawn light on brick and stucco was different every day.